The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is proudly presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook by using promo code RTRS. When I say proudly, I mean we are proud. I don't know if they are proud. And brought to you by Adam Kasabi, the official realtor of the process, 302-864-8643.
They never talk about
three. What's that?
DraftKings. They never say on
that. Yeah, you're right.
Ashamedly.
Yeah.
Brought to you by.
Yeah, obviously they're ashamed of it. I would like to hear them. I want to, if DraftKings, Ethan, if you're listening, I want something on DraftKings social saying how proud you are to sponsor us.
Yeah, there we go. That'd be nice.
Adam Kasabi, the official realtor of the process, 302-864-8643. Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Get yours at bigbarker.com/Ricky. Mortgage CS, become a Mortgage CS Ricky VIP and mortgagecs.com/Ricky. And Kinetic Skateboarding, get 9.1% off your first order with promo code Dave Silver. On the show today, the Sixers season preview. As usual, the starting point guard is refusing to play for the team, and we have no idea what will happen, but we will try anyway. Also, I have a possibility that Mike has to answer to that he may also be a liar. And Mike's 3 minutes on the Phillies that will turn into 7 minutes on the Phillies right after the first commercial. If you're watching on YouTube, we are 49 subscribers away from 12,000. Smash that subscribe button. Smash it. And turn on notifications for us. Kinetic Skateboarding. Woo, boy. I love me some Kinetic Skateboarding. Thank you to Ben from Kinetic. Threw in $75 to the Ricky Barker in the Park team yesterday. We are proudly, I think the pride is mutual with both us and Kinetic Skateboarding. No, I'm saying skateboarding. You're like, I don't skateboard. What do I care? Well, I don't skateboard and I buy stuff from Kinetic all the time. Great clothes, great sneakers, stuff I'm not going to find anywhere else. I would say 10% of my hoodie collection is from Kinetic Skateboarding. I have 4 pair of sneakers from Kinetic. You see, get stuff there you don't get anywhere else. You dress casual like me? Kinetic is great. Go to kineticskateboarding.com and use code Dave Silva for 9.1% off your first order. And I want to thank everyone. This morning was Bark in the Park for Providence Animal Center at Rose Tree Park in Media. Drove down there. Of our 63 Ricky members, I think I checked in 59 of them to give them their t-shirts. So it was great to see everybody. A really strong showing. We raised seven. Now you can donate toward the end to the end of the day. It would be great if you donate, but even if you do, our goal was $15,000 and we raised $17,020 as of right now. So thank you to everybody on the team. Thank you to everybody who donated. Saw a lot of good boys and good girls, a lot of good dogs today as well. And thank you to our sponsors of the team, LL Pavorsky Jewelers, Mortgage CS, Briggs Auction. Saw Stephen from Briggs, brought me one of my lots that I won. Hand delivered, and of course, DraftKings Sportsbook. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Without any further ado, Amos and the chef.
Larry, sweetie, the man is here.
Say the name, I say the name, I say the name.
We will write y'all.
Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy that caused the Phillies to lose by going to the game. That is one Mike Levin.
I really think John Gonzalez is to blame here.
Sure. I'm happy to blame John. I'm happy to blame John.
But we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it later.
After the first commercial.
It's unpleasant to do a 6-hour drive and then lose.
Yeah. I bet. Yeah.
It's unpleasant to watch your team lose in person.
Yes.
Although I think I was better behaved than I would have been if I was just watching at home by myself.
So I had hope in front of other people. Yeah.
I don't know. I was like Yeah, we'll talk about it. Let's preview the Sixers. Something more exciting and happier.
All right. So we're going to do season preview stuff in the second half of the pod. There was news this week. The Sixers officially... Now, I didn't know Neil O'Shea was sort of like consulting already around draft time and free agency, but he was. So Neil O'Shea, who was general manager of the Clippers, general manager of the Portland Trail Blazers, has officially been hired as a consultant to the team. He says in an official statement, "I'm grateful to Daryl and Elton for this opportunity to consult for a storied franchise like the 76ers. I'm thrilled to support a strong front office and contribute to the overall success of the team in any way I can." Now, he was fired from the Blazers a couple years ago when the team did an independent review of the organization and found that there were some culture issues around bullying or something and a respectful work environment. So they fired Neil O'Shea and moved on. Seemed like, and there was a follow-up story on Yahoo just about, quote, "subjected to intimidation and profanity-laced tirades, other bullying tactics, league sources told Yahoo Sports, a toxic, hostile work environment," so on and so forth. The organization, the place that did the investigation was O'Melveny and Myers. I do not know if that is the same independent organization.
I don't believe it is.
Oh, okay, in these types of things. So
the same organization as the Colangelo.
Yes. Review. That was a deep cut. So we got this. So there's two things here. First, there's the mic issue. But second, there's the Neil O'Shea organization issue. So I want to start with this voicemail from a listener, 833 Lickface.
"Spike, Mike, CJ, this is Jacob. And I just wanted to call to flag a concern, a growing concern that I've had ever since this Daryl Morey, James Harden China video came out. And I am just wondering what Josh Harris's appetite is going to be with all of this nonsense going on with the 76ers. And this is a growing concern for me because of a couple things that we've heard in the last week. It could be nothing, but it could be something too. And the first thing is from Bill Simmons' most recent podcast. And before you roll your eyes, Mike, I know that he just likes to say shit, but he's been right before. And he mentioned in this podcast that he wondered if there's any chance that the 76ers would move on from Daryl to try and save this James Harden situation, which is an interesting thought that was dismissed, and I may have dismissed it too, if Zach Lowe on his podcast hadn't also specifically flagged this Michael Rubin interview. And we laughed at the interview because Michael Rubin's a bit of a clown. But if you think about it, this is an owner of the 76ers, a former owner, who is openly criticizing Daryl Morey for not paying James Harden and mismanaging the situation. And then today, the 76ers hire Neil O'Shea. I don't know if it was today, but it was just reported today that they hired Neil O'Shea to be an advisor under Daryl Morey. But maybe it's just that word advisor that makes me a little bit nervous. This is the same ownership group that brought in the Colangelos and fired Sam Hinkie. And I just worry a little bit about our president. I'd love to know what you guys think. Thanks. And Spike Eskin is a liar."
So Mike, I asked you, do you think the Neil O'Shea thing, does it give you Jerry Colangelo vibes? Is there like your gut tell you there's like a thing there?
Well, I brought up the question last podcast until Michael Rubin hacked my computer and froze me. Mm-hmm. That could Daryl be fired because of this? And would mm-hmm. that solve, would James, would that like satisfy Harden? Would he be like, "Oh, okay, then I will stay here"? Obviously don't know the answer to that. The O'Shea thing is tough. Obviously the toxic workplace situation, I'm sure it's probably not good to be like a woman or a person of color working under Neil O'Shea. It's like very vague. They don't say like a specific thing. It just says like toxic workplace. There was some like sexual harassment, like women, like things in the,
I don't want to accuse him of anything that we don't know that he did. There's nothing about in there about being a person of color or a woman.
Well, it's just generally, I mean, that's me assuming, of course, but okay, like if it's a toxic workplace,
sure,
you would think it's, and he's a white guy. You just, I mean, that's my,
well,
assumption.
Okay. So
yeah, that's my assumption. I'm assuming.
Yeah. But it's an unfair assumption. I want to say like, there are people who are not cut out to be managers who are fine doing other jobs. So there are some people who are, I would say, driven in a certain way that makes them crazy, that makes them bad managers, but also possible to work here fine. I assuming that he is racist and sexist is probably not fair.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not necessarily saying that, but just saying like, if the workplace is toxic, then it was probably more toxic for more marginalized groups. But that's an assumption that I'm making. So I'll rescind it.
Okay.
I mean, it's funny in the sense that like the Sixers are obviously very toxic, and to hire a toxic workplace guy is like, great.
Perfect. Okay.
That makes sense.
All right.
And then the Daryl thing is, who knows? They're making it a point to say that they hired him and he consulted on the draft, which was before the Harden stuff escalated.
Now it's getting like announced. It's just weird, the timing. Do you know what I mean? Like the timing is odd, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely weird. My first reaction, and this is obviously a guess, is that it's more similar to the Danny Ferry thing. When Danny Ferry was run out of Atlanta, I believe, honestly, I can't remember.
What happened with Danny Ferry is that he was on a group phone call about free agents, and he made a comment about Luol Deng having too much Africa in him, and it was construed in a way. I don't think he was saying that he is too black. That's not what I think he was saying, but it was obviously offensive, and it was strange that a private phone call was sort of leaked in that fashion. But how is this connected? How is this like the Danny Ferry thing?
Well, because Danny Ferry then
hired Danny. Right.
Danny Ferry then got like an advisory, like a couple years later, sort of
got advisory
back in after he got like knocked down a few pegs, which I'd always been expecting that Brian Colangelo would be on the same path.
It's amazing that he has not popped up anywhere but Australia, by the way.
Italy also, I believe.
No, he bought was Australia. The team that he was part of the ownership group was
Australia. I remember that also. I thought there was also an Italy thing, but I might have just believed my own fan fiction for a second there. I don't know. It doesn't seem necessary. It's like, yes, he gets credit for drafting Dame. This is Olshay. But apparently he got hired like pretty recent, like pretty close to when that happened. And the structures in place and the scouting situation was already established at that point. He drafted CJ McCollum and then reportedly was very reluctant to trade him because it felt like he was like his guy and kind of waited too long to do it. I don't know. I mean, like every GM has had some draft wins and draft losses, like good picks, bad picks, etc. But it seems like, I don't know, these teams just love hiring consultant type people that they can say like advisor. You remember when the Sixers kept firing GMs and then hiring them as consultants?
As consultants, Doug
Tony
Collins.
DeLeo, Doug Collins, yeah. Probably fucking Randy Ayers.
Rob Thorne.
For a long time. Like all those guys, Billy King, like they just like, it's such a nice parachute to just like stay on the payroll. It probably doesn't matter, but it also doesn't make me happy.
It's just weird.
It's weird.
I hadn't thought it was weird until the caller. In thinking back, and we had just done Ricky X, and it was in my mind because I was listening to all of those old podcasts. It brought me back to when they hired Jerry Colangelo, and my first instinct was not that this is bad. I think both of our first instincts, if you go back and you listen to it, I'm just saying that.
Don't go back and listen to it. Never, never do that. But
it's just,
yes, I think it was I will do any amount of convincing myself that it's going to be okay for a long, long time, longer than I should in a lot of cases. If I want something to be true, as listeners of this podcast know, I will hold on to what is pretty clearly wrong or at least unpleasant stuff to be like, no, it's probably fine. For as long as I want to. And if it's something that I don't like, I will obviously take the first chance to see something that is bad and go, that'll continue to be bad and will be bad forever. And it's horrendous. So, you know, we're working on it. We're all working on trying to be better about our priors. That was what my statement about Mo Bamba looking bad was last podcast. We're trying to be better in year 11 of this fucking thing. It's definitely weird, but I think that maybe the draft thing is saying that he was consulting for the draft maybe is a little hint of like, don't worry about Daryl here. But that's a lot of heat for Daryl to absorb. There was already talk of like, after Daryl's thing in Houston with Hong Kong, which is obviously he was right to say that, like, and it was very bizarre that it, you know, went the way it did into a global incident. There was concern that he would never work again in the NBA because of how hot he was.
Well, he was unemployed for this, like 6 days.
So. Well, yes, but he was still on Houston. He was still on Houston. So it was like if his contract had expired, I think there was talk of like, he maybe jumped at the Philly job because it was, here's a new opportunity to start with like a big, long runway kind of thing. So maybe this Harden thing also lends itself to that, but I would be surprised if they fired Daryl today, I would be surprised if he never worked in the NBA again in like a main decision maker capacity. I would be surprised by that.
Oh, for sure. The Rights to Ricky Sanchez is brought to you by Adam Kasabi. Now, I have to say, I know I told you that you could talk about the Phillies right after the first commercial, but we have one thing right after the first commercial, and then we can get to the Phillies, I promise. The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is brought to you by Adam Kasabi, the official realtor of The Process. Adam Kasabi is going to be the one. I was talking to somebody at Bark in the Park today about who just moved back to the area. I was talking about how hard it was to buy a home right now. It's very hard. Now, if you would like to buy a home, especially, you know, if you're going to go to Adam Kasabi by the Delaware beaches, which is, if you're in the area, Delaware beaches over Jersey beaches every time, just as good, way lower property taxes. Adam Kasabi is going to be your help to get you that home at the Delaware beach. It is hard now. There's just not a lot of homes out there. They go quickly. They go for more than asking. And having somebody, a realtor like Adam, on your side to know about houses maybe before other people know about them, to know little tricks of the trade, Adam Kasabi, his team, which is based out of Long and Foster in Bethany Beach, is who you want to go to. 302-864-8643. That is his cell number. You can text or you can call him or you can email him. Adam@processrealtor.com. That's Adam@processrealtor.com. Can take you anywhere the Delaware beaches, whether that is Rehoboth, whether it's Dewey, whether it's Lewis, whether it's Bethany, all of the great Delaware beach towns. They can hook you up anywhere in Delaware, anywhere in Maryland. But here's the great news. If you're looking to buy a home in a state that isn't Delaware or Maryland, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, California, I don't care where, go to Kasabi, give him a call, shoot him an email. He will interview realtors for you through his giant Rolodex of realtors, find the best one for your personal situation and connect you to him. You only need one realtor. It is Adam Kasabi, the official realtor of The Process, 302-864-8643. That is 302-864-8643. So, Mike, before we get to the Phillies, just some possible evidence of you being a liar.
Okay.
Now,
I'm certain I've lied several times on this podcast. I wonder what you are.
I'm sure.
Talking about here.
Well, Bill Simmons has been a lightning rod in this podcast oftentimes for the Celtics stuff, for Process stuff, whatever. Even when I've insulted him, I've continued to say he is incredibly important within our industry, sort of paved the way for things like us. And you have repeated that you have cast doubt over that influence, but also said that you don't like Bill Simmons, you don't listen to Bill Simmons. But then Wednesday morning, Bill Simmons releases a podcast and says this.
Fortunately, the Philadelphia 76ers can't say the same. And their over-under is 47.5, and it's dropped 2 wins, and I still like the under. This is a mess. House, can they save the season? I hope they don't do this, but if this Harden thing is unfixable, like, is there a scenario where they just move on from Daryl to try to save it? Because I feel like that scenario exists.
How does that help them?
I don't know. Like, what else do you do? You have this Embiid window.
Well, if they reach the conclusion that by getting rid of Daryl, then Harden will stay and that he will be happy.
And be engaged for a year?
Well, they would have to, like, dangle the extension that he thought he was getting.
And then Wednesday night, the same day.
That came up.
If Daryl is not getting.
Yes.
Came up before. No, I didn't hear it.
Hmm.
For real.
Can I just play it for the people?
Sure. Thing. The return that ownership finds suitable for James Harden.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously Daryl is hoping and presumably telling people in the organization that, hey, over the next 6 months, obviously like more players are eligible to be traded mid-December.
Mm-hmm.
But over the next, between now and the trade deadline, some teams will get desperate. Some teams will be better than they think. Some teams will have injuries, whatever. And some of those teams will want James Harden and will finally make a fair offer for him.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows how real that is. But I'm wondering if ownership is impatient.
Right.
Could ownership just decide to fire Dell?
Oh.
Could ownership...
So my question is, did you listen to the Bill Simmons podcast, even though you said you don't like Bill Simmons?
Absolutely not. I had written it down earlier in the week, which I will occasionally think of thoughts and then have a little document that I keep my thoughts on.
Your takes.
My takes, and also the Sixers roster and various trade proposals that I've pitched on this podcast that you've shot down.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had written that down earlier in the week and then I said it, but no, I didn't. I didn't listen. I'm sure I've lied about plenty of things. I promise that I did not lie about listening to Bill Simmons.
I think you like Bill Simmons.
Rehashing a Bill Simmons take on the podcast that like hours after it happened.
Okay. All right. Just making sure. You kept me in check. I am now.
I think it's a worthwhile question to ask.
Yep.
And I could send evidence of my my podcast downloads and do not see Bill on there. I listen to other Ringer podcasts, but I don't listen to Bill.
So let me set you up here. You wanted a time on the pod to discuss the Phillies, at least briefly. Now Phillies went up 2-0, seemed unbeatable, obviously, to all of us. I mean, it seemed a World Series championship, at least a trip to the World Series, seemed inevitable. And then they lose 2-1 to the Diamondbacks. Can't score against a rookie pitcher who looked, by the way, pretty nasty.
He did
pretty
nasty
stuff.
Yeah.
Then lose a much worse game in game four. It's now tied. Mike, your thoughts.
Yeah, so I went to game four. It was extremely unpleasant. It felt bad the whole time. It felt Sixers-y the whole time. Even when they went up 4-5-2, it just felt the dread of like, this doesn't feel good. They're leaving so many opportunities on the table. Like I see people blaming Rob Thompson a lot, and I don't think Rob like managed a great game. But when like nobody in the bullpen is throwing strikes, there's no magic elixir to like go with the right guys.
Right.
I would have liked Sanchez to go a little bit more, but he wasn't commanding his changeup. I would have liked Taijuan Walker for two or three innings if that's what he's there for. I would have liked Lorenzen for two or three innings. Like burning your bullpen in a game where like the hitters also didn't have it is tough. But ultimately, they just like they weren't throwing strikes. They made several outs on the base paths. Bohm made two outs on the base paths. Trey got caught stealing first time in a while. They swinging at shit, like just making a lot of really bad, unengaged mistakes. They get second and third, one out, not getting the run home. Like it just, that stuff happens over and over again. And like eventually it's going to come back to bite you. And they just keep, you know, in game two, they went up 3-0 and then blew it open to get to 10 and then put them to bed. But like, you got to keep, when you have opportunities to do that, like you have to score runs. You have to get runs in. And over again, this Phillies lineup, which is obviously very vaunted and talented, just like taking like big swings when you just like, you got to be shortening up in those situations. And almost every Diamondbacks hitter felt like they had a better approach than Phillies hitters. I thought Marsh played really well. I thought Schwarber's had some good at bats, but like Bohm looks like shit. Hasn't like lifted a ball in 3 months. Cassiano's back to swing it. Sliders 2 feet under him, low and away. JT has bad at bats. Rojas had a triple. That was nice, but it's just too many guys making mistakes and it's going to come back to bang. And they should have lost that game last night. It wasn't like, oh, they played so well and then just lost it. Like they played bad the entire time and every time they had anything going, it felt like luck. And when the Diamondbacks had stuff going, it felt like our pitchers just weren't finding the zone.
Yeah.
Frustrating.
The two notes there. The first thing on on Thompson, it's very funny. I mean, baseball managing more than probably any other, maybe a football play call at the goal line, similar, but more than anything is like this, what's the phrase I'm looking for? If it works, it was a good call. If it doesn't work, it was a bad call.
And, pretty easy to say that. Yes.
Yeah. And for Thompson throughout these playoffs, he has made moves that at the time people were like, I don't know about this. And then it works and it's Topper the genius.
Yeah.
Sometimes the guy just gets a hit or the guy doesn't get a hit. And that's what happens. So I think I agree with you. It's last night cannot be put on him. Yeah. I also think Bohm, the other thing about Bohm, who you're right, has looked bad at the plate for a while now, at least for several games there, was making like two defensive plays a game.
Yep.
That stunning defensive plays that made you forget about everything else. And then the last thing I would say in terms of, you know, getting the guy home when you need to get the guy home, it was great while it was going, obviously. But I do wonder, when you go through a stretch like the Phillies went through, 5-6 games, where everybody that gets up there, and we were talking about this, we're watching it. There's no way they don't feel it. That every time somebody gets up there, they're fucking hitting a ball 427 feet.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, that doesn't last forever. All of a sudden, that goes away, and you have to change your approach. Mm-hmm. It's probably so hard to get your mind in that spot. And I wonder if that hot streak is over, if they can shift their brains in time. And like what I said, game three, and I know his ERA was 6, but if you watch the game, he was fucking nasty that game.
He was
nasty. I see no shame in not scoring off of that guy. He looked great, but game four looked bad. I still think they win in 6 games. I think they win tonight, and I think they win game 6 on Monday, but
yeah,
it was ugly game four.
Yeah. It's very weird. It's a weird state. My sister's lived in Phoenix since I was like 11. So I come here all the time. This is where I'm at right now, doing a podcast from her guest room. And that stadium, I've been there when it was Bank One Ballpark, like years and years ago. And this is the first time I've been back as an adult. It looks and feels like a Dick's Sporting Goods.
Really?
It is so bizarre. It is absolutely devoid of any personality whatsoever. Maybe if the dome was on, I mean, it was 101 degrees at 5 p.m. So like, thank you for the dome. But maybe if the dome was off, it would feel a little bit better if the roof was open. But it feels like a fascist government's place where they train their youth army. Like, it is so...
Do you think that's what a Dick's Sporting Goods looks like?
No, I guess separately those things.
Okay.
Sort of like a half Dick's Sporting Goods and then half youth army.
Okay.
It was really, really bizarre. And then, you know, Arizona sports fans are bad, obviously. And my brother-in-law has been here his whole life and is a Cubs fan and has always resented Diamondbacks fans because they just like don't know anything and don't really give a shit and don't pay attention. So it was very bizarre seeing them celebrate, like rightfully so, they deserve to celebrate after a win like that, 2 wins like that. But then they were saying like they just have so much less experience being cocky or smug or anything. So it just felt unnatural to them. Like I was walking out of the stadium and this guy just kept repeating like bad day to be a Phillies fan, like over and over again. Like he said it like 12 times. And I was like, is that the line that you got? Like you're so excited about it. It just felt very unnatural to them.
Yeah.
And there was another fan there was a Phillies fan and a ton of Phillies fans there, which is always fun. Phillies fan and a D-backs fan fighting in our section, like during the 8th inning, right after the D-backs took the lead. And the whole section like turned to look at them. And I'm like, I'm watching the game still. And also, I will never fight on behalf of a Philadelphia sports team. In no circumstance am I gonna fight on their behalf. I will fight them sooner.
Right. Yeah. It's insane.
I hate them. I hate what they're doing.
Seeing the fights of in NFL stadiums, which I don't know if there's more of them now. Maybe it's just people are videotaped. I have no idea.
I think it's the second thing, but yes.
I'm watching them and I'm going, wait a minute. How did it get to this?
How embarrassing for everybody involved.
Yeah.
don't fight on behalf of people that don't know you, whatever.
No.
Some people slap my back on the way out, being like, nice game, thanks for coming, like that kind of thing, which is like, okay. And if they touching got a little bit more in my face, I would have maybe, you know, grabbed their wrist and bent it in half.
And but by the way, they
would do the same thing.
Phillies fans have earned being taunted at the Arizona Stadium 100%. There's nobody goes from woe is me to smug dickhead like of Philadelphia fans.
Absolutely. And that's how I wasn't being smug dickhead to other people, but I would have just been like having a good time by myself or, you know, with the friends I was with, John Gonzalez and the crew. It was a bad game. And if they lose today, I'm going to walk into the desert. I'm prepared to do that. I was ready to lose. After Johan's triple, I said, if they didn't get this run in, I'm going to slit my throat on the field. And the report will be Phillies fan kills self on field up 2 in the 7th. But you just knew, you could feel that it was going to get bad because it's just like, got to throw first pitch strikes. Got to like take advantage of opportunities. Too many ducks on the pond. Like fucking score runs. Be the better team. You are the better team. Like, be serious. You can tell the Phillies loosen the reins when they feel like they're too good. They just go like, oh, we got this. And then they just start making mental errors. Chris Sanchez not knowing how many outs there are. Like, it's just too many of those things happening. And we got to all like grow up and realize this is the playoffs. And you're not just going to win because you dance after the game.
And for sure, the Phillies, I think, are a better team than the Diamondbacks, at least. But talent-wise, I don't think it's close. The Diamondbacks just swept the fucking Dodgers. So it's, you know, it's, they're not, they're on a, every team at this point right now in baseball, championship series, and then everybody's on a heater. Everybody who got there is on a heater. Now, the Phillies were on a different kind of heater, I would say, more than the other teams. But even the Rangers were on a heater, and all of a sudden they ran into the fucking Astros, and that series looks over the other way now, you know? So whatever.
Yeah.
So what's your prediction?
The prediction is we talk about the Sixers to make ourselves feel better.
So right after this, CJ will reveal the official punishment for me being a liar. And then we will dip into our Sixers season preview right after I talk about Big Barker therapeutic dog beds. Saw a lot of dogs today at Bark in the Park. A lot of fucking dogs. Said a hi to a lot of dogs. I do like the bit where a dog can tell that you like the dog and immediately lays on the back for belly rubs. Immediately. They can spot a rube a mile away.
Yeah, that's good.
Big Barker therapeutic dog beds are just different. They're different and they're better. I know to you, if you haven't heard this before, that you're thinking to yourself, what difference does a dog bed make? Makes a big difference. BigBarker.com/Ricky. BigBarker.com/Ricky. I want you to think about how you sleep and think about your dog's bed. Does your dog's bed look more like your pillow or more like your bed? Chances are it looks more like your pillow. Now, a pillow is fine to lay your head on, but you wouldn't want to sleep on it. If you slept on your pillow, you would wake up the next morning and you would be really creaky. Your back would hurt. Maybe that's just me. Your joints would hurt. Then imagine if you did that every day for years. It would build up. Your dog is the same way. That's why Big Barker is important. Go to BigBarker.com/Ricky. You will get the only dog bed engineered by experts to keep your dog healthier, to support your dog's joints. It's a real bed, unlike those other ones that are not real beds. Is there a price difference? Yes. Are you getting better quality? Yes. If you go to BigBarker.com/Ricky, you get the Big Barker dog bed with 2 process pup patches. Put the patch on the bed. Send us a picture of the dog on the bed. They become a process pup. We're bonded forever. All different sizes. I know it's called Big Barker. It was originally designed for big dogs only because dogs over 50 pounds, up to 80% of them develop arthritis as they age. But now there are Big Barkers for every size. Barker Jr. all the way up to the XL. Rebel sleeps on a Big Barker. Norman sleeps on a Big Barker. Your dog should sleep on a Big Barker. Your only job is to give your dog the best life possible. And Big Barker is how you do it. 10-year warranty. The foam doesn't flatten or they replace it for free. 1-year at-home trial. If you don't like it, if your dog doesn't like it, you will get a full refund and they'll even pay for the shipping. Handmade in the USA. Big Barker dog beds.
Woof.
CJ. Now, if you'll remember.
Here we go.
Just to recap, I said I wasn't going to watch the Sixers if James Harden was on the team. Now I say I will watch the Sixers if James Harden on the team. I've been convicted of being a liar. CJ presented the audience with
convicted
three...
of being a liar. I like convicted. Yes. You have been convicted. A court of law has convicted you for being a liar. I also want to say that you did. You had a whole announcement video, a non-me yeah. announcement video to announce the thing that everybody already knew.
Well, so not everybody of, already knew.
Everybody knew.
DraftKings came up with odds. It, obviously, me watching was a favorite, but it wasn't, you know.
What were
you
the never odds? Know.
I think minus 230 that I would watch. I would oh have to go God. Back.
I
would have
won so much money on that. How did I not but, see that?
Just so you know, those were I official DraftKings odds.
$20,000 on you watching. I would have done it. I would have gone all in. Ridiculous.
I felt okay, like. CJ. There was enough. So CJ gave three options as to what my punishment would be. One is growing a beard until Harden is traded. Two, getting a fucking tattoo of James Harden eating cheeseburgers. And three, going to a Sixers game dressed as James Harden with a James Harden jersey, shorts, James Harden sneakers, high white socks, a James Harden beard, and holding up signs that I think James Harden would hold up as long as the signs didn't get me thrown out.
Harden right? stand type signs.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. CJ, what is the result?
Yeah, so the results are definitely not as close.
Not close.
They're not close.
Okay. When I saw it, they were pretty close.
In the beginning, they were close.
Give me the third place first.
The third place with 23%.
Wait. Can I just one thing? This vote was conducted on Twitter, on Spotify, and on YouTube. And it looked like there were a lot of votes on all. More votes than we normally get on a Spotify thing. A lot on YouTube, which we never use. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, the most people voted on Twitter, then YouTube, then Spotify.
Yep.
Tabulating them all together in third place with 23% of the votes, growing a beard.
Okay. That would have been my guess for third place.
And can I just... I did get a few people that said, fuck, Spike can't grow a fucking beard. What are we doing here? I'm not CJ. I can grow a beard. You can see full facial hair all the time with me. I don't grow it out, but I was a little insulted at people that said I couldn't grow a beard. Anyway, next.
Second place, which we will know the winner after this, is with 29% of the vote, getting the tattoo.
Yeah.
So with that, first place, with 48% of the total votes going to a Sixers home game, dressed as James Harden with signs starting chants every quarter.
Who do we know the person that pitched this idea? Do you remember him?
I would have to look, but
I remember you said it on the last time, but I thought it was a good pitch. Yeah. I think this is the right answer. We will give that person credit, the tattoo, but I think the tattoo would have been, you could have gotten a small tattoo in between other tattoos and nobody ever would have seen it. This is the loudest and biggest shame that you can and should have to do. So although I do not support this idea of you doing a punishment in response to your, you know, obviously betraying your word and betraying all these people, I have to admit I am rather excited about this.
So
this came from Grant
Woodward, who also said Spike must also try to start at least one Let's Go Harden chant per quarter. The game he chooses must be made public to us as well in advance. Yep. So anyone who wants to witness this can do so.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is. I know Mike, you're saying the tattoo is not that big a deal. To me, the tattoo would have been a big deal. I know I have a lot of tattoos, but I choose all of them and none of them are James Harden eating a cheeseburger. So there was
like a big hole where that could have gone.
Well, I have plenty of empty skin for sure. The other thing I would say is though I do not want to do this at all, and though I know the Sixers are going to fucking hate this, the content opportunity of me doing this is by far the best of the three, I think.
Yeah, and that's really what you want out of this, I think. That at least gives you some satisfying content out of it. This I'm so not like a, despite having a podcast, I am not a look at me guy in public like this. Mm-hmm. I would be very uncomfortable. I would get very shy about it.
I'm not looking forward to this.
I'm glad that you're going to have to do it. My suggestion would be, and I'm more than a suggestion, I think we need it to happen soon. I think this needs to be like,
I think that's fair. I think that's fair. Let me just sort of give context here.
Okay.
As you know, I get hip replacement surgery on the 1st.
Push it.
Or the 31st. No, I'm not pushing it.
Reschedule.
Yeah. So,
or you can be high on whatever medication you need to be taking that as you do this, and then you don't remember.
I'm not even allowed. I can't be in a car for an hour and a half. So look, what CJ I'm going to say is, here's what I'm saying. As long as James Harden plays for the Sixers and I watch it, I am committing to do this. I will do this even if James Harden gets traded after that happens. I am in for this. What I think I need to do is find a game that is, given the recovery, even speedy recovery, which I plan on doing, in that I am the podcasting Aaron Rodgers, I plan on recovering faster than anyone has ever recovered from this, but still, I need a few weeks afterwards. So I will pick out a couple of different games. I'll submit them to you guys. You guys tell me if it works or not. And I will commit to going to that game as this. I will commit to let's go Harden chance, whether James Harden is there or not. So, but I do need to recover from the hip surgery. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. So mid-November?
I would say late November is probably more realistic. I got to get cleared before. I have to get... I'm not taking
risk. I need an independent doctor. I can't have a spike doctor be clearing you for this.
An independent doctor? All the doctors are independent.
No, I don't know. I don't know who's on your payroll. So we got Sixers, Cavs on the 20th. Wait, I don't have the home or road. But there's a couple games end of November that could be a possibility.
This is all I'm asking. Today, by midnight, I will send you guys a few game options that I know work from a work standpoint and a life standpoint and are reasonable time. But I promise it will happen. I absolutely promise it will happen.
All right, Sixers Lakers, Monday the 27th on NBA TV, an NBA TV game.
Lakers tickets can be too expensive.
Sixers Cavs on the 21st.
That 21st sounds like it's probably quick.
TNT game and an in-season tournament game, which I know you are very excited about the in-season tournament. Yeah.
I am. So I think this is a good intro as we're talking about Harden into the season, as the season will be very hard to predict in terms of record, in that we don't actually know who's going to be on the team. But I thought this was a good question. It is Harden related, and it's a good way to kick this off. 833 Lickface.
Mike, CJ, Daryl, if you're listening, do you think if the shoe were on the other foot at the present moment, would Daryl trade 2 first round picks and Terrence Mann to get Harden if he were the Clippers GM?
So if Daryl Morey were currently the Clippers GM, do you think he would, knowing what he knows now, because he would have to know what he knows now. Everybody knows what they know now. Mm-hmm. If Daryl Morey were the, it's hard to parse because, you know, Harden's doing this to Morey, but assuming he was doing it to Sixers President Brian Colangelo, would Morey trade 2 first round picks, a pick swap, Terrence Mann, and salary filler for James Harden, given the situation?
I think absolutely. Also, there's some like ESPN Sports Center notification that continues to go off in this room. So I'm not sure if the mic is picking it up, but it's just constantly happening. I think maybe my nephew is making like ad drops downstairs or something in fantasy.
Is it the Sports Center song? Is that the Sports Center notification?
It is still doing it and I can't find it. And yeah, over and over again. So I apologize if that's happening on the podcast. I think he would do this. I think he would wait. I think Daryl would know, yes, I want James. Yes, I'd be willing to trade 2 mediocre to bad first round picks and a role player for Harden and expirings. Obviously it'd probably be Mann, a first round pick and a pick swap. And then Daryl would reroute Mann the Sixers GM in this situation would reroute Mann for another first round pick. I think he absolutely would do that. I do think he would wait and use as much, not that, not all of it, just over and over again.
I think
Daryl thinks that he's good. I think that because
even Daryl after all knows, the nonsense, Daryl would.
Yes, I think he might wait. He might say, "I'm holding strong on my offer for as long as possible."
Yep.
Because right now there aren't any other teams that seem to be at least publicly making noise about a Harden situation. I've mentioned Miami as a possibility. I've mentioned, I think, Chicago could eventually be a possibility. Still, I'm never going to give up on Toronto. And there might be a couple other ones that pop up. But if Daryl was running the Clippers and he knew I'm the only game in town right now, and the other GM is being publicly threatened by the star player,
yeah,
and now there's speculation about firing, of course I would wait. There's no reason to. But did you see the Terrence Ty Lue announced the Clippers starting lineup?
Yeah, Terrence Mann's the starting power forward.
Russell Westbrook, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, Terrence Mann, Ivica Zubac. What year is it? That is the worst spacing of a modern lineup that I've ever heard in my life. Paul George is the only one of those guys who is a legitimate threat from three. Kawhi Leonard, and obviously he can hit threes, but he's not a floor spacer. He's not like a catch and shoot guy. His knees are bad. He shoots like such a line drive. His efficiency from three has and will continue to go down because he just doesn't get enough lift on it. And he doesn't,
Hold on. Last 4 years, 37.1, 37.8, 39.8, 41.6 from three.
Volume though.
Okay. I don't know that answer. I will
look. And off the catch. He's just not a good catch and shoot guy. He likes having the ball in his hands and spacing up. I don't like that lineup at all if I'm them. Zubac doesn't stretch the floor. Westbrook is Westbrook. Terrence Mann is a decent shooter, but averaged like, what, two per game last year? Like, this is not enough of a... Kawhi did shoot 41% from three last year, which is better than I remember it being.
I know, that's what I just said.
But no, I know. But yeah, like, no, but it's just, he's not Buddy Hield. He's not Covington even. Like, there's just a lot of clunky guys in the way there. If I'm Daryl, I'm looking at that and going like, you need somebody else there. You need, like, I'm sure Daryl's taking any morsel of good news he could possibly
Wouldn't you like a point guard?
Not that Harden is the only guy who can shoot in the league, but like, I look at that roster, at that lineup and go like, that's not a championship lineup. It's just not.
Yeah.
It just isn't. Westbrook at this stage in his career, Terrence Mann, who is fine, Zubats, who's also fine, but an aging Kawhi. Paul George is going to have to be standing 28 feet from the basket the entire... He's the only one that is a real, true catch and shoot. Defense has to cover him that way. Floor spacer. I don't see it really working. And the West is going to be good, man. So I think Daryl is going to hold on to his offer. I don't think it makes sense to just trade Harden for whatever, but in his mind, I do think that that Harden's going to keep making it annoying for, if not Daryl, at least for us.
Well, we can promise that. I'm sure of that. The Rights to Ricky Sanchez is brought to you by Mortgage CS. Mortgage CS, thank you for sponsoring the Bark in the Park team. Love Mortgage CS. Mortgage CS also donating some tickets, unfortunately, to the top two fundraisers to go to Sixers Wizards. Lower level tickets, though. Really good. Thank you, Mortgage CS. I met a Mortgage CS customer today at Bark in the Park. Mortgage CS is, quite simply, to me, the only place that I think you should go if you need to get a mortgage, especially if you've never done it before and you don't have a trusted partner. I can tell you can trust Mortgage CS. You can trust them because they're independent. I know them. I know Alec. I know Ben. I've seen them in person. I know how they feel. I know that what is important to them is making sure that you understand the mortgage process. What is important to them is being available to you whenever you need them. What is important to them is being independent. So you know, when they're going to get you the loan, that's what a mortgage broker does. They're an independent mortgage broker. Broker goes to the banks and gets you a loan, that you know that the only person that they're working for is you. A lot of mortgage brokers have deals with banks. And do you know for sure in your gut that when they're leading you saying, hey, you should go with this one, that it's the best for you, or is it just the best for them? Mortgage CS also available for you whenever you need them. You can call or text Ben, who is their CEO right now, anytime, 267-391-7425. 267-391-7425. Text them right now. Text them. Ask them if Mike's a liar. Ask them if I'm a liar. Go ahead. They will teach you about the process. They will take you from beginning to end. They will be available when you need them quickly, whether it's at night, whether it's on the weekend, which you will need when you're buying a home, especially in this environment. We trust Mortgage CS. Every Ricky listener who has gone there has given me great reviews that I've heard from. If you don't trust them, if you don't trust me, Google them. Tons of 5-star reviews. Go to mortgagecs.com/Ricky to schedule a consultation or call or text Ben 267-391-7425. This advertisement is not a commitment to lend or extend credit. Mortgage CS is an equal housing opportunity mortgage broker. All loans are subject to credit approval. Certain restrictions may apply. Company NMLS 1464766. Visit mortgagecs.com/Ricky for more information. Here we are, Mike. Another season. It begins. I have a bunch of over-unders. I have questions from the audience that will lead us to talk about different things on the team. I guess my question to you is, we've had negative vibes for weeks and weeks and weeks. Is your gut telling you that this resolves and we end up with a normal Sixers season that ends up with a chance to win in the second round like we usually do? Or is your, I do have this feeling, I think I texted Sixers Adam during the game last night as I was watching both games, like a fucking lunatic. One team's in the playoffs, the other one's playing an awful preseason game. It was actually kind of a fun preseason game. I just have this bad feeling that it could spin the wrong way. Like we could get one of those ugly seasons. You know, the Heat win 26 games when Dwayne Wade gets hurt, or you know, one of those things. Do you have a sense of whether this will just feels chaotic, will normalize, and we'll get a mostly normal season, or worse?
It's hard to be optimistic about anything good coming of the Harden stuff. He didn't play in preseason. He showed up and then left.
Yeah.
I think at some point someone will offer something for him, and maybe it'll be a first round pick or a fake first round pick or two, whatever. And it'll be like a good enough situation. But if Joel gets hurt or Maxi gets hurt, then obviously that's hell.
Yeah.
That's real hell. But if they both stay healthy, you know, in the preseason game last night, which I watched after I got back from the Phillies losing again, there is a lot of movement. Like it is stark watching the team play with pace and sharing the ball and just feeling like there's a level of togetherness that I even knowing that Nick Nurse was going to implement some of that, it's thus far in preseason, obviously it's working. It looks more aesthetically pleasing than I would have guessed this early. Maxi obviously had 12 assists, which is a preseason, but career high for him.
It did feel like a lot were transition-y assists. It just, my gut, I don't know what the number is, but yes, 12 assists for him is a lot. Yeah. And he has been a lot of movement, also a lot of pushing more than they've done previously. It seems like it's a conscious decision, not just Maxi being fast. You know?
Well, they have to do it if Harden's not going to be there. They have to get points in transition. And so often they had, you know, when it got bad last season in the playoffs, it was, well, they're not pushing and also they're not scoring in the half court. So it's just, there's no options. You got it. It's like you're hoping for like a, you know, roughing the passer penalty to like save you from the drive. Like it's just, there's nothing good can happen out of it. Melton looked really good. Obviously the Jaden Springer stuff is such a joy for me to experience.
He looks great.
He should be in the rotation. He's, you know, a total hound on defense.
I know you're not going to want to hear this, but also him looking great does increase his value in
absolutely
a potential star trade for sure.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. If that's a sweetener possibility to get them something else, then I think Daryl would absolutely use that. I think Melton and Springer are in some ways overlapping skill sets, obviously. But yeah, there's ways. I mean, B-ball Paul played to the four last night. Like there's things that I'm liking to see, and you go like, this is interesting, this is fun. This could be, I think Maxi is going to continue to get better, all this good stuff. But ultimately, the problem with continuing to fail in the same place in May every year means that everything is fake until then. Like everything is just, you're just waiting to see if it's going to happen when it actually matters. And the East luckily is pretty, I think the middle is going to be better of the East this year than it was last year. I think the Pacers will be better. I think the Magic will be better. There's a couple other teams. I think the Hawks will be better. But luckily, after the top two, you're still And obviously Milwaukee's got some weirdness going on with Terry Stotts quitting because him and Adrian Griffin didn't get along, which I think is good.
There's some meltdown potential, I think, in both top teams. Both top teams are clearly a level above the Sixers, but trading the Celtics essentially trading their emotional leader and Marcus Smart and relying so heavily defensively on Porzingis and Horford, who's 35 or whatever.
Yeah. Older.
And then the Bucks, who in addition to what you mentioned, the weird Terry Stotts thing, an emailer noted, you know, Giannis's advanced numbers last year did take a dip. And I do think there is some potential for like, who's the alpha between him. He handled the ball so much previously, and now Lillard there. I do think there is some potential for meltdown on both of those.
Yeah, we'll see. And that's a first time head coach with now like no Terry Stotts safety net, who was also probably a helpful bridge for Dame, who he used to coach in Portland. Boston obviously has problems with their coach that people, you know, are trying to rectify. Sam Cassell is now there, bringing some of that Doc Rivers flair to Joe Mazzulla. And yeah, their depth is sacrificed. I think they're going to miss Grant Williams. I think both teams are head and shoulders better than the Sixers right now. But if things change and you get in the playoff series with those guys, the Sixers might have the best coach of the three, which is something that you couldn't say for a while or ever.
Well, they definitely have the best coach of the three, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to... I mean, Adrian Griffin could be a good coach. We don't know yet. It's a rookie guy, so it's hard to know. And Mazzulla, obviously, still... even though people had issues with them. So they still went pretty far and had a good amount of success. So I don't want to be just like dour on each podcast.
I don't want to either. To me, this is the pivot, right? Like the off season, I'm not whining about Harden every podcast anymore. Like from this point on, I
refuse to say that. Okay. I won't whine about Harden every time. That's not something I'm willing to guarantee.
From this point forward, I think largely our podcast is about the season and whatever's going on with Harden, but I'm sort of, until he's gone, done calling. Well, that's also probably a lie. I take that back.
You can lie. You can lie right now. That's fine. This is a lie I'll allow you to do. You want to set an intention.
Yeah, my intention is to talk about the Sixers. The offseason was crazy. We talked about the craziness. It was a bummer, but the season starts now. So the only thing that I thought was a negative from the preseason game is it's just preseason games. But Joel not playing in the three of them, if he had come out in this game and physically looked like he was, like Danny Green looks great physically, Springer looks great physically, fucking PJ Tucker looks great physically, Embiid looks like normal, slow start of the season Embiid. Like sure. He just looks sluggish. I would have loved if he didn't play, if they were like, he doesn't need it, for him to come in and look like he had spent the entire offseason getting in the best shape of his life, and he does not look like that at all. He could have used more preseason games.
Look like more of the same, you know, went to the line 15 times. Like there's a very Joel time. He keeps talking about how he's like, I never wanted to play isolation ball. I don't think that's the right way to play basketball. Like I love passing and stuff like that. It's like, he doesn't pass like he loves passing. Like,
no.
If you've watched Joel in the last 8 years, he doesn't pass like that. So I'm excited to see it. I loved Melton had a really nice game. Melton had some nice finishes in transition, which is good to see. He is, you know, such a worse finisher than he should be for his athleticism ability.
Wasn't Maxie making fun of him for that before the season?
I really like Maxie and Melton's dynamic. Yeah. It's very fun on and off the court. You know, Kelly Oubre helped. I wrote in the newsletter that I'm deciding to be a Kelly Oubre guy. It's just like there's enough pieces of this team. I don't think depth is an issue. It's high level stuff that is the issue. And we're going to be dealing with the same Tobias stuff this year of like the ball's moving fast. People are making like read and react quick decisions and the ball goes to Tobias. And then he's like, it's a jab step. It's a thinking. It's a record scratch, all that stuff. I like the Javante Smart two way. They waived Ricky Council. I wonder if he gets picked up somewhere. I'm excited. I think Javante Smart is just a better player and is more ready to help right now and is definitely more of a point guard type if they feel like they need a little bit more creation in the deep bench type thing. There's a chance that he plays over Patrick Beverley at some point this season. Who knows? But, you know, they're missing the second guy or third guy, if you want to say Maxey the second guy. They're missing that guy. Tobias is not not good enough to be that guy. He can have good games, but he's not quite there. So I question the ceiling of it, but if Joel actually commits to passing and improving as a passer, and Nick Nurse can scheme something out to where they look better as an offense with Joel as the hub, but is moving the ball well, we'll see. And then it'll come down to, can Dell get anything for Harden that makes them more interesting this season?
I do wonder, and I have a voicemail that will lead us to a Embiid discussion. I do wonder, when he's saying he never wanted to play isolation ball, and we keep thinking it is a shot at Doc Rivers, I wonder if it's also, I don't think it is, because it is my understanding that he likes Harden, wants to play with Harden, but I also wonder, when I hear it, is it a shot at Harden too?
Yeah, could be. Yeah. Could be for sure. But I'm sure Harden would say, like,
yes.
Yeah, yeah. I love playing with flow. We should absolutely play fast and play with flow.
Well, he said it already here, absolutely, by the way.
That just doesn't mean, like,
he does.
But you're not going to make me move, though, right? I don't have to, like, run around and, like, try. That doesn't sound interesting.
833 Lickface.
Mike, Spike, and CJ, this is Elias. I'm calling because I'm listening to the latest episode. I heard Spike's idea for CJ about, you know, him providing a Briggs auction idea of the week. And CJ, like, you had to ask for a raise right there. Like, he was just adding more to your workload. And Spike was totally, you know, in the spotlight. We were all listening. I guess that's mixing my metaphors, but whatever. And, like, with all these strikes going on, solidarity with Mike, you know, in the past and probably maybe the future, you got to go for the throat there. And I was really disappointed. Well, as a worker, frankly, that you just are allowing Spike to exploit you this way. Okay, basketball question. What do you think Joel's stat line is going to be this year? Yeah, that's how excited I am about this coming season. Thanks, Lickface.
I think it does mean something. So Joel Embiid over under 30.1 points.
I mean, I would love an under. I'm hoping for an under.
To me. So what are you taking? Say an under?
No, I'll say over. But I want
to. Me too. All right. Assists. Actually, hold on. Before I give you the assist number, because I came up with this number, but I do want to look at his stats for a second to make sure it's actually possible, the number that I'm giving you. Over under, Joel Embiid assists per game.
Last two years has averaged 4.2 each year.
Okay, so I'll say 4.9.
I'll say under.
I'm going to say over.
Wow.
Yeah.
That would be something.
Yes.
That would be something for sure.
And then, because remember,
it's more the assist to turnover ratio in the playoffs.
Well, 100%. There are two reasons why I think Joel Embiid's going to average more, the five assists or more. One, if you watched the game last night, like a moron, it does seem like there's going to be more dribble handoff than we've seen in a while. And Maxey's capable of that. And Melton is capable of that. And those are easy assists. And the second thing is, the last two seasons, he's had Harden there basically feeding him. I wonder if Embiid sort of being more of a needing to basically do it just by virtue of usage, his assist numbers going up. Joel Embiid over under. So rebounds the last 2 years, 10.6, 11.7, 10.2. Joel Embiid over under rebounds, 11.1.
Yeah, I mean, last year was visually his worst rebounding year of his career.
Yeah. Yes.
By a lot. There just seemed to be a lack of explosiveness, and maybe that is to the point of the person who called and said he should be in better shape, which, like, sure, yes. I hope it's an over. I hope it's a commitment to an over. And he can just,
I think this is a good question.
Up.
Yes, I would love so too. And by the way, we did get a call, I won't play it, asking why none of the Sixers box out. I think the only Sixer that does box out is PJ Tucker.
Yeah.
On the team. Mm-hmm. 833 Lickface. This is a good question about this year's Sixers.
Spike, Mike, CJ, what's going on, guys? It's Jordan the mailman. Hey, I was wondering, my basketball question is this. Who do you think is going to be the biggest beneficiary of having Nick Nurse as the coach? I guess I could see Maxey's, like, understanding of rotational defense getting better. Not like he doesn't try hard, but maybe even Tobias, because Tobias isn't that efficient of a scorer, and maybe Nick Nurse will figure something out with that. My non-basketball question is this. So you guys are bitching about having too many questions about shit and sex. So I thought of a clever way to combine them into one question. Okay. Okay. My question would be this. Who would suffer more, Spike if he could never listen to music again, or Mike if he could never watch TV or movies again? Thanks for the pods, guys. Love you guys. Bye.
I think that's easily me and music, right? I mean, the non-basketball question.
Yeah, I'd probably, I like watching TV and movies.
Right.
So but I'm not watching TV and movies like for my job so much.
Right.
I guess neither are you really for music, but.
No, but I've listened to music like a lot, but I guess you watch TV and movies a lot. I would be harmed emotionally without music. So who do you think is the, I think we would all like for the biggest beneficiary of Nick Nurse on the Sixers, we would like it to be Joel, but realistically, yeah.
That's the unsexy and should be correct pick. Joel deferring to other people and there being movement and like second side actions and just like off ball screens, cuts, move, like it's just like a system rather than just like go ahead and Doc clapping in the huddle and saying like, come on, come on. Like that's not going to do it. Hopefully that should work. And then, With more of that on the offensive end, then Joel can commit himself to rebounding and defense more. I would say more pertinent to the success of this team than Joel having to do all of it by himself offensively. B-ball Paul, I think, is an option that we've talked about. The fact that that Nurse will let him play through his mistakes and also play a little bit of four different, like just like sort of a havoc making agent.
Play with Joel in the final preseason game, albeit briefly. Yeah,
absolutely.
I think it's Melton.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't know how much better he could be than how he played last year. He'll obviously start this year, but I wonder how successful of a player he can be. What skills he is improving at, or what offense is highlighting his skills more than he did last year. He had a great year last year. And then when the shot sort of fell away later in the season into the playoffs, my recollection is him shooting poorly in the playoffs, although that might not be true. I'll check. He got less effective, you know, that's sort of how it's going to go.
I sort of think, because Joel aside, he is probably the most effective on both sides of the ball player on this current Sixers. And yeah.
No, he shot the same in the playoffs in regular season, but maybe just in a couple important games, he missed a couple. It felt like it. I'm just talking, it's about feelings. I'm more of a feelings than stats guy.
You're an eye test guy. It looked like he shot fewer. Yeah. I guess I just sort of think that if D'Anthony Melton were on the Raptors previously, he would be playing like 38 minutes a game. Not because everybody on the team plays 38 minutes a game, but because you can plug him into any lineup. And this team has so few players that you can legitimately plug into any lineup. Now, we all hope Oubre, and I know you as a newly found Kelly Oubre guy, hopes that Oubre is one of those guys. But D'Anthony Melton has proven that he can be one of those guys.
Yeah.
And I almost think, to the Sixers' detriment, it ends up getting Melton a better contract than he would have gotten previously. And he is a free agent after this year. So my gut would be Melton, just in terms of likelihood, even though I want it to be Embiid.
Yeah, I understand that. I understand that as far as like possibilities. The thing that I look at this year, and when you rolled out a Maxi Harden backcourt, you are already going to be at a deficit defensively, no matter who else is on the court. A Maxi Harden backcourt is going to suffer. Melton, right away, Maxi's a year improved. Melton and Maxi as a backcourt is dynamic and interesting. That's why like I'm so focused on Joel defensively, is because like they just need to be, their offense needs to be Joel being efficient, Maxi being efficient, enough guys hitting shots and getting out in transition, and maybe like B-ball Paul some offensive rebounds, that kind of thing. And their defense needs to be a top five defense. And with Embiid, Tucker, and Melton out there,
plus the occasional Pat Beverly, Daniel House, fine rotation. If Springer gets rotation minutes, B-ball Paul, obviously, that stuff can happen. Taking Harden out of this equation is going to make their offense worse. Hopefully it makes their offense better in the long term as far as Maxey taking a step forward. Last year in the regular season, they were fourth offensively, eighth defensively. I think that they will be better off if those numbers are flipped, because I think their offensive rating in the playoffs was not a sustainable one because you could easily take it away. And I'd be fine if their offense took it, and will, because Harden's not going to be there getting as many easy shots in the regular season. The defense is more sustainable to me. And if that is consistent on, and that carries over from the regular season to the playoffs, then we have a chance to beat more teams than maybe is commonly held consensus. And then the offense becoming just a little bit more, as I've said all offseason, dynamic and different and not as obvious, then becomes like, you know, they can win 102-99 games in the playoffs because they've tightened up defensively and they have one fewer, you know, horrible defensive player in James Harden.
Can I throw a couple of over-unders at you?
Yeah. Sixers. Are you not hearing all the SportsCenter announcements? Like it's oh,
I just
it's
heard
so
that
much.
One.
Okay. It's CJ, been a lot. CJ,
is it, I just heard the last one. Is that the first one you heard?
No, I've been hearing it.
Oh,
quietly in the background throughout the,
the whole time. I have no idea what is happening. No one's phone is in here. It's not my phone. I don't know what's going on.
Scott Van Pelt is
trying to break into the podcast.
I think a lot of people's phones are like this, but so I turn off notification. I have notifications off for everything but text messages, and I don't get like audio or vibration notifications, but it pops up on my home screen. I turn off all notifications. My dad asked me to fucking fix his phone once. And every time I type something, another notification popped
over up. And over again.
A lot of people do that, right?
It's just so many notifications left and right. It's like your screen is never off because you're just getting every app is constantly alerting you to stuff.
What do you need to know?
Yeah. SeatGeek is just yelling at you for like, hey, do you need this? Do you need tickets to this concert in Alabama? Spotify is like, here's a new thing.
Over under. Wait, hold on. Let me make sure this
person
number makes
is on
sense.
Zoom. Do you want to Zoom with him? No. Stop asking.
Oh, does Zoom actually send you?
Yeah, Zoom and like Google Duo. They're like, hey, you're this girl you hooked up with 15 years ago is on Google Duo. Do you want to FaceTime her by accident? No, I don't.
I want to turn on my notifications just so I can get them. Yeah, I want to see what they're like. Okay, over under.
I don't need any apps to suggest things to me. I'm good.
Over under. Tyrese Maxey assists per game. Now, for context, last year he averaged 3.5. The year before that was 4.3. Now, remember, that was the no Ben Simmons year, and James Harden came.
Yeah.
Two-thirds of the way through the season.
Interesting over to see what you under, said. Is this you setting it or is this DraftKings setting it?
No, this is me setting it. I don't think DraftKings has this, but I will go and look. But I think this is definitely me setting it. I was on DraftKings, so you can see I opened it up. I was about to bet earlier today. As I was leaving Bark of the Park, I decided before I get home, I was gonna place $20 on Trey Turner to win NLCS MVP, which is still plus 600, and then $20 on Zach Wheeler at plus 2,500.
Oh, that's good.
That could be possible
if he shuts them down tonight.
Yes. If he shuts them down tonight, he goes eight innings, you know, three hits, no runs, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So this is, I will look to see if DraftKings has...
We just cursed him. We just fucking did it. I'm going to blame CJ for that. CJ, if you clip this, I'll fucking kill you.
Okay. Does it have player stats? Hold on. Let me see if this really... Assist per
game. What did you say to that?
I said it at 6.8.
That's high. That's high for you.
It's got to be high.
Did you do that this morning after the 12 assist game?
I did it this morning.
Okay.
I did it during the game. Now, when did I send this? I sent this this morning. I did it this morning.
I bet that 12 assist game made you bump it a half a point.
Well, he's got it. I guess what I would say is I know it's just an assist per game number, but if he's the primary ball handler, he's got to be near this number, right?
Who do you think led the Raptors in assists last season?
Okay, so the options would be Van Vliet, Siakam,
or Scotty.
Yeah, I don't think it's Scotty. So I'm going to say that Pascal Siakam led the team with 5.4 assists per game.
Siakam had 5.8, but Van Vliet led them with 7.2.
Okay. All right. There you go.
And Scottie had 4.8.
Okay. So, and by the way, Van Vliet, you know, Van Vliet and Maxey are not the same, but I do think in terms of like not being a point guardy point guard, they do have some similarity. So over under 6.8, what do you think?
I'll say under, but not much under.
Okay. How many times does Patrick Beverley get thrown out of a Sixers game this season? Over under 2.5 times.
Over.
How many games does James Harden play for the Sixers this year? Over under 8.5 games. There it is. I just heard it again.
It's nonstop. It's nonstop. It's driving me insane. I'm trying to like turn the microphone away from it so at least it doesn't like pick it up so much.
It's a good bit 8. Now. 8.5. Yeah.
What an odd number to set it at. Because there's nothing. Under is zero, but under is also like 7, you know, like, and 7 might be like the right exact amount that it happens. I'll say under.
I would say under as well, but I think it's going to be right around there. I do. I said this on the pod. MOC said this. I do think we're getting a final season in Houston type Harden thing where we get a couple of normal games and then he just temper tantrums out, has a couple of bad games.
And it's so weird for his teammates to have to keep answering questions. Like they have like just amnesia that like they don't know what's actually happening. But like in Houston and even in Brooklyn, he did not stake so much of an obvious claim that he wanted to get out of there. And he was blaming one specific person for it. Like even when him and he was like giving the side eye to Kyrie in Brooklyn with good reasons and many other reasons, like he wasn't telling Chinese children that Kyrie Irving is a liar.
No.
He wasn't holding up signs in the club saying that Kyrie Irving is a bad teammate and he'll never play with him. Like he'll never do that. Like this is unique. And it's also his last chance to get the final contract. The problem is we don't know what's going on in his mind. Oh, my nephew has found the iPad that was hidden in a stack of things and has taken it out of the room.
Ask him what's happening. What are we missing? What are the alerts? It's just going to be college football scores, right?
It must be. I don't know. I really feel it feels honestly like when you're in a writer's room sometimes and you've sort of like made decisions over the course of a season to get characters to a certain point, and now you have to like find your way out of that decision and all the choices that you've made over the course of the season that you've been like, yeah, we'll figure it out. Then you get to the point where you're like, we got to figure out the finale. And every idea seems either really obvious or really crazy. Finding the like surprising, but like makes sense plot point to save the season is difficult. And when you find it, you're like, oh, that's great. That feels right. That feels like the right one to do. I don't know what that is yet. If I was in the James Harden writer's room, I would have a really hard time pitching on how this could end. Him playing 4 games and then getting traded because like the Clippers go, okay, here's a second pick. Or, you know, DeMar DeRozan getting hurt and the Bulls just going like, we'll trade Zach LaVine for him, fine. Or whatever it is. Who knows? Like, I don't know. I don't know how that ends. I don't know how that ends up. So we're here. So I don't know. I'll say under. And if the Sixers, you know, they won money from Simmons in that arbitration thing when he didn't play, is that what they're going to do to Harden? Are they going to keep finding him?
I think they send him home. Not he doesn't come in. I think he will show up, but be a little bitch about it.
It's weird because like, unlike Simmons, when he showed up, which was pretty sad, showed up to practice, everybody's like snickering and like, he has no like friends on the team at that point, although even though he did, but like he felt like ostracized, or at least it looked like it from the outside. Harden is close with a lot of these guys.
Yeah.
And so I think that is the thing preventing Harden from going, I will be the biggest piece of shit anyone's ever seen, is because at least in some way he feels like I owe it to these guys to not be that much of an asshole.
Yeah. But Tucker was in Houston when he did it, you know, like he didn't he have friends on that team too?
Probably. Yeah.
And he seems like he's even bigger dickhead now. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I'm taking a lot walk at lunch thinking about like what I can pitch for this Harden show. I'm like, I don't fucking know, man. I don't know how they're going to get us out of it. At a certain point, you're just like, my boss will figure it out. They'll do the one that they want to do. And they'll be like, great, that's fine. Shoot it. So I don't know.
I think it's sort of like foolhardy to predict Sixers wins and what they'll do, because there's just too much to figure out. NBA overall, do you have my opinion is the only team that I believe has like zero fraudulence potential is Denver. So,
which is an easy thing, which I don't disagree with, but it's also like a very easy thing to say.
100%.
Like I was on the train of like Kawhi is the best player in the league, mm-hmm. before it became consensus that he was, for like a short period of time at least, close to the best player in the league. And it's like, that's crazy to say that until like everyone really, like, it happens quick, right?
Yeah.
And it happened for Denver prior to last year. They were frauds.
For sure.
Or like couldn't quite do it or whatever. Whatever you want to say. And then they did it, and it goes like, it's easy to see them doing it again because they've done it.
Yes. But and by the way, it's easier to do it sometimes once you've done it.
Yeah.
And I do think there is a possibility that they are sort of in this thing where they're going to have 3 years or 4 years where they obliterate everyone. And I think you could make an argument. I think people may have said this when Milwaukee won, but there were still questions about the coach. There weren't any fans in it, the stands during the games during the regular season. And there is some fraudulence potential with Giannis, even though he's very good. So what I would say is, I look at Phoenix, there's obvious doesn't work yep. possibility there. Mm-hmm. Look at Golden State. Dude, they won 44 games last year. And everybody was there, Bo Wiggins. Like,
yeah,
they're
and Draymond's think, there.
And yeah, and they're, you know, Clay's a shell of what he was. You know, I love Steph Curry. I think he's actually historically underrated. But when you win 44 games last year and have they I think have to prove. Lakers, I don't, maybe, but I don't believe in it. In the East, we already outlined fraudulence potential for the Bucks and the Celtics. I think, I know it's true that it's obvious that Denver is the most reliable, but I also think, just what I think. So I don't want to make a pick that I don't actually believe in.
Yeah, I mean, I think Memphis is, if Ja can come back and like be normal or whatever that means for them, I think they have a really good chance. I think they're a really good team. I think Marcus Smart's going to help them a lot. You know, swapping Dylan Brooks for Marcus Smart is like a crazy upgrade. It's going to be, I mean, it's going to be a good year. I'm going to love watching the West. I'm going to love watching these. I'm going to love watching everybody, but the Sixers for the most part. Part of me wants to say Sixers Suns finals so that I can come to fucking Phoenix and for another goddamn loss, because I did come to Phoenix for the Super Bowl, even though then I sent Alyssa and my sister to the Super Bowl.
If the Sixers and Suns are in the finals, I will.
Oh, wait, here you go. Wait, you're about to set CJ, start pressing record.
I'll get the Harden cheeseburger tattoo.
Just on his own, even if he's not on a team.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't think you're going to have to get burned by that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know where it's going to go. It's hard to repeat. Denver does look obviously like the
best.
It's
easier to repeat in the NBA than any other sport, though.
Yeah, the Aces just repeated in the WNBA. They had an incredible season, even though they had injuries to deal with. It is. I just want to once again say, and this is, and I'm not saying it for Daryl. I have a second question. First question is, do you think Daryl wants the Phillies to lose? And I think the answer is yes.
I think the answer is no. And here's why. The Sixers have cover right now. They have cover. Like,
but they're playing.
Yeah, but no one's going to pay attention as long as the Phillies are playing and the Eagles are good.
Yeah, but the Phillies only playing for another week and a half max anyway, you know? I think you'd rather them lose, so then their people are mad at them also. It's not just like everybody's fun except for the Sixers, which is what it had been prior to these last 2 days. And the Eagles losing to the fucking Jets. The other thing is like how much luck plays into everything. If Kevin Durant's foot was a quarter of an inch behind the line, and that was a three a couple years ago, Milwaukee has never won a championship. They've never like done anything. And because it happened, it did. And, you know, even last night in various games, like there's a foul ball that like drifts into the stands by a couple feet. A player is not better for doing that than had the ball landed, you know, in foul territory that could be caught. Like, it's just, there's so much luck that goes into everything. And just because the result of one thing happened does not mean that it will happen again or should happen again or would happen again if they redid the situation. Now, do I think that with the Sixers? Every year except for the Kawhi shot? No. They deserve what happened to them. They earned their losses. And I don't feel good about like a crazy title run this year. And I don't feel good about crazy cap space next season. But we got to put a couple players that I find interesting and like rooting for. So hopefully it's at least an interesting season, and Daryl can surprise us with a midseason trade that makes this more of a worthwhile endeavor than I expect right now.
And I would like to, we just got news in the chat. Do you see that dunk the other night from Trevor Linquin? He signed a two-way officially.
I played well last night, but I didn't see the dunk.
My only request, Daryl, if you're listening, President, Mr. President, please do not trade James Harden on October 31st, November 1st, or November 2nd. That is my only request, that you don't do that. Otherwise, you can do whatever you want. I don't know what the Sixers are going
to
do.
You can just call in. We'll just call it in. Just hold a phone up to your, lay it on your chest.
Well, I'm gonna bring my less good mic downstairs, and I'll have my laptop downstairs because I won't be able to get all the way up here, just in case there is a Harden trade, so I can make a spot appearance if they trade him. Something tells me this is going to go on much longer than we want it to. So
it always does, doesn't it?
Yeah, it always does. Yeah, everything about this has gone on much longer than we wanted it to.
Every single thing.
All right. Last one. Here we go.
Just like take some pride. Let me just one last thing, because this is the last pod before the season starts, right?
Correct.
Joel, just like take some pride in the whole thing. Have decide, like there was the campaign for Joel to win MVP at the time was, I think, fine and reasonable.
Yes.
And not as embarrassing as people
made it out to be. I'm proud.
He wanted to win.
I wanted him to win.
It was reasonable that you would want to win. The idea that like Jokic doesn't care is not like more normal than Joel wanting to win it. The loss in the playoffs and the way it happened, even though Joel had missed a few games with the sprained knee, makes it feel pathetic for all of us after the time. And I want Joel to feel embarrassed by how the season ended and how he won MVP and then just went out in such a limp fashion. And I want him to be motivated by spite this season. As we talked about all offseason, like we're trying to give him bulletin board material to finally become the guy in the playoffs that we need him to be. And there's a long time before the playoffs start. There's a lot of resolution that needs to come from the Harden thing before the playoffs start. But Joel is firmly on the into the back half of his prime, I would say. Pretty close to it, if not. If it's not, then great. He's had a nice, long, successful career. Great. But like, we're closer to the end than the beginning. And if it's going to happen, it's going to happen soon. And there's like Knicks rumors, and there's always going to be Knicks rumors and whatever. Forget about that. Like, I just need Joel to decide that he's the best player on the planet and he's going to play like it all season long. And if that means destroying Giannis and destroying Jokic and destroying, putting Al Horford in the basket and sending Brooke Lopez into a retirement home. Like, all of those things need to happen for Joel and this team to go where it needs to go. Daryl could trade for whoever. Someone could have, like, someone's phone could be hacked and they could allow Daryl to acquire somebody that they would never trade in their right mind. And it won't matter who we get unless Joel becomes the guy we need him to become in the playoffs. And so I need this season to be a ramp to that, where he decides, I've deserved all the shit I've gotten over the last few years, and especially this offseason, and I'm going to fucking take over this year. So hopefully that, and obviously hopefully he's healthy for long enough where we don't have the same conversation we've had six straight seasons, six straight playoffs, and the Sixers can, like, finally win a playoff series that matters. That's the hope.
That was a good inspirational speech. He's going to be exactly the same.
You think it's going to work?
No. No. Of course it's not going to work. But look, the good news is he's not going to request a trade because he probably doesn't care that much. So
it's going to be Pat Beverly, Danny Green, Montrezl Harrell, who's still on the roster for some reason, PJ Tucker, all like slapping Joel in the face before a playoff game, going like, you're the guy, you got to do it. Hey, come on, man. And just, if we simply get enough dogs on the team, will dog energy become contagious?
My hope is, my true hope for Joel is after next summer, he plays on Team USA and they just fucking 3 weeks of being around guys that go, dude, like basically getting shamed by every star in the NBA that he doesn't show out in the playoffs. Yeah, that's my only hope.
Or recruited to play for another team.
Whatever. God bless him.
Yeah.
I love him. I don't want him to go anywhere. But like, go ahead, recruit him. I mean, go ahead. All right. We will talk to you next time. This has been a long podcast, but we had a lot to say.
A season preview and Phillies talk.
And Phillies talk. And punishment talk. Liar talk.
A lot of it. A lot to get to.
We'll talk to you next time. Good luck. Are you down with TTP?
Good luck to the Phillies or the Sixers?
The Phillies.
I won't fuck with you.
Okay. Thank you.
And us.
It's John Gonzalez's fault if we lose. Spike Eskin is a liar.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you.
If you don't fuck with me,
then I won't fuck with you.
But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking kill you!
Time for Plan B.